full steam, and there's much lower steam. It's my way of doing a test of carrier strength, if you know what I mean. So I'm doing that intentionally, John. Go ahead.
Okay, Dick, because I'm going from an S5 to an S20 when you do that. Okay.
And I presume in that last transmission, it went through that whole range. Is that true?
Yes, it appeared to do that.
And here's a repeat of that. Watch your S meter. There's the whole range, and it's a test that I do. And overload. Need a minute. That many hours. that's for the booze, yeah. And I'm convinced a dwelling, in other words, if your ham radio is here and your stop in your place of living in a place, life gets very complicated. Yeah, there's many options available to it's from an African. It's a microphone picking up another loudspeaker if the music is coming. Direct connection.
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
KQRIW testing. I'm now, you're going to be getting me about the S5. You'll be getting me some. John, KC2WGB. Teach you up. I'll hear you quick.
At this setting, are you able to hear me, Dick?
Beautifully.
Who's the asshole with the silver pickup? Fuck you, silver pickup. Fuck you, silver pickup. Silver pickup. Silver pickup. Silver pickup.
Hi, KC2WGB, sitting here in Bell's Corner. I have a question. If you're able to collect your thoughts, Dick, it's a little tricky one. But I have a question from several amateurs over the week. Basically the same question.
Silver pickup, fuck you. Silver pickup, fuck you.
Noise source, RFI, at the source rather than trying to do it at the antenna.
I'll be answering that, John, as soon as I get a channel, if you know what I mean. K2RIW.
Understand it. Basically, believe it or not, Dick, I've gotten that request from basically the same question from Pfizer, Bob, in Goshen, New York.
So I think you're saying the most recent time you've heard that question is from Bob at Goshen. Why doing the elimination of the signal, creating the interference? Why close to the source? Why close to the source it works better? And I guess it's the best explanation I can think of is multipath characteristics. In other words, once a signal is transmitted from an antenna, it's going to bounce off of everything in the environment. Once it has bounced off of everything in the environment, it is a very complicated signal. In other words, it now has a bunch of sending waves in space, in three-dimensional space. If you had a signal strength meter connected to your handy talkie, once you transmit a signal, let's say from the backyard, and you're walking around in your living room, you wrap a rubber band around the push the talk button on a handy talkie in the backyard, and now you go inside the house, and you've got a signal strength meter on your handy talkie, and as you move the handy talkie from living room to dining room, hold it high, hold it low, hold it horizontal, tilt it, when it's horizontal, tilt the antenna toward the north, toward the south, you'll find out that there is a very complicated pattern because of the signal bouncing off of all of the wiring of the house, the plumbing of the house, the conduits, if there's metal beams anywhere, if there's lolly columns, if there's refrigerators, file cabinets, the signal is bouncing all over the place. So in three-dimensional space, if your eyes operated at RF frequencies,
tracking you. He's in a silver pickup. Hello, Jammer. The asshole that's tracking you is in a silver pickup.
Location. If your eyes operated at RF frequencies, you'd see a very complicated pattern of a whole bunch of bright and dim spots in three-dimensional space with polarities of the signal in each of those locations. Understand, Mike? You definitely can. Right after we...
Shut the fuck up, dick.
Right at the receiver site, you can definitely cancel a signal if and only if you've got the original information. In other words, the way the signal is modulated, the amplitude, the frequency, and so on. Yes, you can cancel. Anywhere you want to, you can do the canceling. It becomes more and more difficult as you get further away. If you can co-locate the cancellation circuit right at the place where the signal is being emitted, then that complicated pattern in space from the real transmitter, that complicated pattern in space from the canceller, now will create the exact same pattern in three-dimensional space. And in theory, you can null everywhere. But once you decide to do the nulling right at the receiver site, you can only null one of those locations at a time, per se, because when you're doing the nulling at the receiving site, it's really another kind of transmitter, but it's transmitting from a new location. It's transmitting a brand new set of multipath signals. It's creating its own very complicated three-dimensional pattern in space, and so you won't get the same three-dimensional pattern in space unless they have the exact same point of emission. So, canceling is best done right at the emitting site. There's a lot more to it than that. I wonder if some of that made some sense, John. KC2WGB, K2LAW. You could if you want to read the next letter, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, if you can still hear me. The next letter is in reference to the local defense. A young amateur who does have a license, but he listens to this technet, but he can't reach us. So he's putting up a sloper. He has a, he's going to put up two slopers, one for 10 meters and one for 40. And he has a tree that's about 45 feet high. In doing this, he had tried putting up a piece of wire. The movement of the tree broke the wire. I know we've been through this once with Mel on the suspension systems, and maybe you've got an idea how he can start, and I might have an idea after the offer. After that, I've worked through that problem. He's going to run it down roughly on a 45-degree angle. His tree moves at a 30-knot wind, approximately anywhere between 8 and 12 inches. The problem is when he gets up into the 45 to 55-knot range, the tree moves almost 3 feet, and that is what is breaking his line. He's getting a little tired of going up and down the tree. So maybe you could touch on that for him.
Roger, Dodger, as soon as I get a channel. Looks like I do have one right now. There's nothing magic about making the antenna on 80 or 10, or in this case, 10 meters or 40 meters. Nothing magic about making the antenna exactly parallel to the ground or vertical to the ground. Because once that signal is emitted into space, the polarization is going to become randomized by the ionosphere. The ionosphere, we all look at that as a reflecting mirror. It's really a volumetric plasma cloud-like thing. And because it's a mixture of a conducting plasma and a magnetic field, your signal going in gets twisted in polarization. It's called Faraday rotation. So you may emit a purely horizontal signal. It goes through the ionosphere once, twists a couple of times in many cases. By the time it gets to your buddy in England, we'll say, your horizontal transmitted signal might arrive in England vertical or slanted 45 degrees. It can arrive all kinds of crazy polarization. So there's nothing magic about the polarization that you use. If you've got the resources, there's a lot to be said about building a vertical, a horizontal, and a slab at 45. The way you physically arrange the antenna is only making it compatible with your particular layout of your backyard. And so is there magic to a sloper compared to a 45 degree? Is there magic to a complete vertically polarized antenna? Because the wire is not very expensive, I put up every one of them. And a purely vertically polarized antenna, if your tree is tall enough, on 10 meters, I know you can do that, and feeding it from the bottom, the outside end of the dipole, with no insulator in the center. Yes, he's got to do some impedance matching. It's a 15.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Roger, Dodger, John. So as you said, he's restricted. appearance on the output. I tell you what, how to accommodate the tree you're swaying.
Very good, Dick. No problem.
My dipoles with a spring on the end to accommodate for the tree swaying. And of course, eventually a big enough wind comes along, the tree sways enough and breaks the spring. The spring also rusts, and the spring eventually goes to a fatigue failure because it's continuously being pulled and stretched. And then I tried putting two or three springs in series, and although it lasts longer, you still get a failure. According to some of the earlier issues of the antenna book, the way to accommodate the tree that sways a whole lot is with a real pulley system, a halyard. So there's a real pulley system and a weight. The rope that's holding the dipole up goes over a pulley down to a weight, and as long as the rope is long enough and the weight is heavy enough, now you can accommodate a whole lot of feet of sway of the tree, and still the antenna is being held taut the whole time. You got to worry a little bit about the fact that on a really windy day, the wind is going to be swaying the weight, and maybe the weight's going to be banging up against the tree. And how you create dampening of the sway action of the weight. The articles never seem to cover that subject, and there's got to be a way of doing it. I just don't know what the way is. And so maybe.
Shut the fuck up, Dick. Shut up, Dick. Come on over.
Now the tree, the fact that the weight's going to be swaying in the wind in the case against the tree, that's a minor, but it bounces against the tree when the wind sways the weight. That's a minor problem. And you could put some kind of a shot in this. Mechanism can now accommodate a whole lot of tree sway, and I can think of ways of creating a shock absorber so that the weight doesn't swing too hard in a really heavy wind and go slamming up against the tree. There's ways you can build a damping mechanism on the rope, you know, a couple of feet away from the pulley. There's probably a way of controlling the sway of the rope, but that's a secondary effect. But the springs to accommodate the sway of the tree is only a partial solution. It never worked for me for more than 6 months at a time. And so that's one possible approach. Pulley is probably the best way, John. And in my opinion, a pure vertical antenna on 10 meters, you wouldn't have the problem. The hold-on antenna sways with the tree when you're speeding it at the bottom. It's only the 40-meter antenna where he's going to have this... make the low side of the antenna a little bit off the ground. Hopefully, it's also low side. And in the way of Rex Grove from the house over to the pulley. I need to away from the going up and down in the backyard. No little tree nearby that I can come up against, you know what I mean? 62 WGB, K2LIW. I bet you've got a third one, too, John. Over here, John. I'll get you.
Hey, Dick, WS2N.
Go right ahead, Paul. You got another suggestion? How you solve it?
I don't do it now, but years ago I did have that pulley system. I used a rope and just a big tent peg, you know, with enough play in it. And here's this big, heavy, I used a big cinder block, heavy-duty cinder block, weighed about 40 pounds. And that thing used to go up and down, but it couldn't sway too far because there was a rope and just a big tent peg, and you know, right below it.
So I think you're saying the tent peg and the rope going to the cinder block and rope that was the real suspension mechanism, that tent peg rope limited how far it would sway, but didn't limit how far it would go up and down.
Kind of taut, you know, during a real windy day, but 99% of the time it's okay.
Pretty fine. play as much as you want in any particular direction. You probably have a third one there, John, so go ahead with your third one. KC2WGB. K2RPW on the deck then.
Okay, Dick. Yes, in fact, mine is a combination of what you just mentioned. What I did was basically something that looked like a garage door spring. I did something like that. It was about the inch, 40 centimeters. It was a garage door, maybe 3 feet long. I cut it into a 2 foot, 18-inch section, and I used that in series with a door check off a storm door. And exactly what you're saying. Put the shock absorber, long pole, pole, and the spring acted for the affiliates, and it worked very well. Hard.
Crazy. basketball growing up, tweeting, texting, and all that. They want to hear it again. This is state scheming. I know. Sounds crazy, right? Just listen.
John, you ready for the third letter? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
I got you in there now, Dick. What was the question?
Are you ready? Third letter, GB.
Negative. I don't have the example for this week. Pick up and see if you can get through to somebody else. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
for news. You cool to that ghost dog. This old flag ghost dog. The white
house. Hey, Steve. Stevie boy. The trackers are going up and down your block. Three fucking times. Going down.
Okay, this is TechNet number 1086. Wonder who would like to check if you could questions, give me a call, Mrs. Wright. K2 on IW listening.
Anthony Xena, but I'm going to wait out the space report.
Hey, Steve. Stevie boy. The trackers are going up and down your block. Stevie boy, come outside and meet them. Why don't you go outside and meet them too? You're second on the list. Shut the fuck up. Bobby's going down.
Paul, WS2N.
Shut the fuck up.
Why don't you give us the space report now, Paul? A brief version of it. I'll hear you on the input and repeat what you say. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yeah, I'll copy that, and yeah, we'll keep it brief. WS2N, I just want to mention tomorrow is the anniversary of John Glenn's first orbital flight, where he did three orbits, where originally planned for seven, but they shortened that. They had some issues, so I won't go into that. We will keep it short, but 50 years, 5-0. And came down in the back in the Atlantic near Puerto Rico, was picked up by the NOAA ship, NOAA. That wasn't the primary ship to pick him up, but wound up 100 miles short or so. Just wanted to bring that up. And then I also wanted to bring up one of the losses of an astronaut passed away, Janet Voss. Janet Voss was an astronaut back in the early 90s and made about five flights on the space shuttles, some of them to Mir. The first one up in a space shuttle is called Space Tab. They used to have the big laboratory in the cargo bay of the space shuttle to be able to climb in through the port and just go into the back of the space shuttle. They had a big room set up there with many, many times space air flew. She was on first.
Hey, Steve, they're on your block, Steve. Steve, they're on your block, Steve. There's three of them. There's three cars, a silver pickup, a silver SUV, and another fucking car. Going up and down. Fuck you, trackers.
What was your five flights?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
So we covered the... I'll make it brief. I'll make it very brief, Dick. Janet Voss, John Glenn mission. The Dawn spacecraft. Which will be the Grail. That's the one. Got the double spacecraft rather. By the Pegasus.
Go ahead and be gone with it.
Mercury. Got we've had quite a few spacecraft go to Venus. Just the Venus Express going in orbit around it right now. And that's by European Space Agency. But we've had Magellan there doing radar mapping. Mars has a lot of spacecraft in orbit, the MRO, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. Also European Express by the European... orbited pretty much, or visited Jupiter, Galileo, and now eventually Juno in 2016. And then you even had...
come out and play?
Not in Queens.
What, you're not mad enough?
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
What Paul just brought to our attention was the New Star telescope is going to be launched on March 14th. Of this year.
Don't be Queens boys, cowards, we're still here.
And John Glenn's anniversary, 50 years ago in 1962, is when he was the first three orbit of an astronaut. John Glenn also went up in the space shuttle when he was like 76 or so years old. Is that true, John? I mean, Paul, WS2N, K2LIW.
Yes, he did. He did. That was great. Now he's 90 years old, so he did an interview recently. But yeah, he got a second chance. Some of them do get a second chance. Alan Shepard did. He was the first man into space. And then he finally...
Bernie?
After an ear problem.
I think I got the jammers.
Science fixed his ear problem.
Give me a location.
Flight. And then we all know he went to the moon on Apollo 14 as commander. So some of them do get a second chance.
Glenn, where are you?
Meet me at 60th and 264.
Might have good news coming to you.
Kick him in the teeth, Bernie.
I believe there was a report this morning of John Glenn is now 90. His wife is 92. I think he's still in pretty good health. He was like, what, 74 years old or so when he flew in the space shuttle. Is that true, John? Paul, WS2N, K2RIW?
Say 74, something like that. And yes, he is, I was mentioning, probably didn't hear me, but 90 years old. 90 today. This year. So there you go. Like I mentioned, some of them get a second chance. Alan Shepard was one of them. First man in space, and eventually he went to the moon. So, very good. Back to you, Dick.
When John Glenn went on the space shuttle, was he the oldest man who has been in space so far that we know of, Paul?
Yeah, early 80s, I don't know if it was 82,
And look, they had, what, five, I guess, at least five service missions to them.
The last I'm gonna take you back about, like, I think 2 years, 2010. I think my man, so shout out to my dude Superstar J. Talking about the whole thing with the misconception that y'all did have a problem between you, Cam, and Jim, and all that stuff. He was riding out for them.
Okay, so most likely then went up in 1990, and we repaired it in 1992. Does that sound about right?
Yes, that sounds about right. Because I think the first shuttle flight with John Young and Crippen, that was what, 1981, April, and then you had the Challenger flight in what, 86. And that delayed things. It was, Hubble was supposed to go up earlier, so yeah, but that puts it in 1990, and then the Hubble repair probably, you know, 18 months later, they sent that crew up, changed all the optics and everything. And mission after mission after that, I mean, they changed the solar panels, they changed the computers, they changed gyro system, four gyros on board over time, all of them, big battery banks. You know, each battery was like 40 pounds. A lot of stuff changed out of that thing. Plus the optics, of course.
The Challenger failure was January of 86. Columbia failure was February of what year, Paul?
That was 2003. February. Gotta go with February 1st. You know, bad things happen. Like end of January, beginning of February. January
1967 of Apollo 1. 1957 failure of Apollo 1 messed up the schedule where Kennedy said that we're going to launch a man to the moon and land him safely back on the Earth before the end of the decade by 1969. We just barely made it, so to speak. Looks like we would have been ahead of schedule if it wasn't for the Apollo 1 fire. And all of that rechanging of the design to make sure flammable materials went on board, that set them back, about 18 months, is your guess, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
Oh, yeah, about 18 months on that. Almost 2 years, I guess, on Challenger. Another 2 years on Columbia. So, yeah, that's what happened. And, a lot of people don't realize that we made it. You know, Kennedy's prediction, we not only got one flight in, but two flights before the end of the decade. Apollo 12 was launched during 1969.
Yeah, launched during 69, but landed in 1970. Is that what you're saying, Paul?
No, let me think. I think you're thinking of Apollo 8. That's the one that went up at Christmas time. That made it in. That was just an orbital flight. Apollo 8 was the one that they went up at Christmas time and read the Bible from Genesis. They got in trouble, a lot of trouble for that. But Apollo 12 was definitely within 69. I don't know the date. I forgot the date, but I think it was before the end of the year.
The Apollo 11 moon landing. I'm trying to remember now. Was that June or July of 1969? Huh. Bet you know the date. What was the date that Neil Armstrong said, one small step for man? How are you, Paul?
That would be, July 20th. Went up on the 16th, landed on the 20th. And Buzz Aldrin's first words was, magnificent desolation.
So that's what he said when he got onto the moon. And I think his main reason for saying that was that as you looked around, you saw the blackest of all possible black sky because there's no atmosphere. The stars were not very visible because your eyes are adjusted for the very bright sunlight. You're at high noon sunlight, so to speak, shining off of the gray dust of the moon. Although the moon is a fairly black object, by